Hello and welcome to my podcast on photography. My name is Ewan Bell. This series started life as a YouTube vlog, but you can now listen to each episode here as a podcast as well. If you would like to watch the YouTube version, just head to my website or search for me on YouTube. I love getting comments from listeners and especially love getting inspiration from your questions. Thanks for joining me today. Such a hard question to answer, how to help someone when they say, I'd like to shoot a little bit of video. What do you think is the best way to start? I've wanted to do a video about how to shoot video for a while, but it's complicated because it's a freaking pain in the neck. It's just a lot to take in. You need to know about frame rates. You need to know about codecs. You need to know about log gamma. Most of the time, unless you're shooting raw, you need to know about editing tools that are completely different. And the more you learn about editing, the more you realize that you have committed to something really intense here. This video is to make you think about all the things you've got to learn if you're going to step into video. It's not going to be how to do it. It's going to be a list of things you want to get across. Lots of photographers now have access to really good video equipment. Your little DSLR and your mirrorless systems, and maybe even your phone, will shoot really good quality video. Problem is, for the average photographer, video is just a whole other world. Video is a lot of work. It's a lot of effort to get right. The editing is far more involved than with stills. For most people, sticking to their phone is really the best way to shoot video. And even though your mirrorless camera is going to capture way better quality footage than the tiny sensor on your phone does a better job of processing and gives you very simple ways to pull together and edit stuff that you're shooting. If you're going to step into video on a camera, it's going to be a lot more work. So why is video hard? What is it about shooting high quality video that really makes it difficult? It's not the camera that's making it hard. The camera is not making it difficult. It's simply the technology. My wife's a photographer and I'm a photographer, and photography is what we're good at. Photography is our thing. So why would we want to step into video? Our clients had been asking for video for quite some time, and most of them we would say no, because if we're going to do something, we really want to do it right. And we don't want to offer a service that's not an absolutely the best quality that we can do. I had been dabbling to make a few short videos for some of my tours, and then some of my travel customers, I was making videos for them too. I was doing it reluctantly. I didn't really want to step into the space, but the thing is, the cameras will do it. The cameras are handling it really well. The limitation was me, not the camera. So the challenge becomes, how do you set up your cameras to record video and to capture it so that you have a workflow that will deliver really good quality to your clients, something that's going to be better than just shooting it on your iPhone. And the thing about shooting it on your iPhone, you're inside an enclosed ecosystem. You can film it on the phone, whatever color profile your phone is going to use, it simply stays with it. You edit it on the phone and you can spit it out. It's really good for social media. Most video content being made today is made on phones and really should be. If you're just posting stuff to Instagram, the phone is really good. First thing that you need to know is, of course, light. If you start with really good quality LED light, you're halfway there. It is going to look so much better. We see this with our clients. We come in to shoot some stills. We'll do a little bit of video. They'll be there with their phone capturing some of the behind the scenes. And they say, wow, this looks really good. Of course, it looks good. If you have good light, you have good video. And I'm going to assume that if you're coming from a photography perspective, you already get light anyway. There's no magic secret here. There's no, if you shoot with this particular camera, then it can shoot even in terrible light. If you shoot with terrible light, you just won't get beautiful footage. The next thing you need to know if you're going to shoot video is the 180 degree rule. And this is so important. I'm going to try to explain the 180 degree rule without going into the history and the mechanics of how we used to shoot on film, on a film set with canisters and stuff like that. This is just so hard. Okay, the thing you need to know is if your frame rate is 25 frames per second for the project, then your shutter speed for the video should be around about a 50th of a second. 180 degree rule means it's 180 degrees out of 360, so it's half. So you've got to have an exposure that's at least 180 degrees out of that time. If your shutter speed is too fast, then it doesn't trick the eye. Our eyes will see the staccato between things. It goes like this instead of being smooth. Whereas if you have 180 degrees, it's nice and smooth. Let's think about a little cause and effect. If you're shooting at 25 frames per second frame rate, then you want at least a 50th of a second for your shutter speed. If you have a shutter speed of, say, 1/2000th of a second, then instead of being 180 degrees, you're going to be like 12 degrees or something like that. It's going to be something small. And that means your eyes won't get tricked. The key to the 180 degree shutter angle is that it's tricking the human eye into seeing smooth motion. So the simple equation is you got to learn the 180 degree rule. What I see is a lot of people step into video and the 180 degree rule is just difficult for them. It's a pain in the neck. And how do you hit that 180 degree rule? Usually you've got too much light. So you're shooting in bright light and hit 180 degree shutter, you end up having to shoot at f22 or something stupid. And that's the problem. And that's why we start doing things like putting an ND filter onto the surface of the lens. You can use the ND filters to slow down the light, and now you can work at an f-stop that you're comfortable with, and maybe you really like shutter depth of field, you want to shoot at f2 or 2.8, and you can still get 180 degree shutter angle even in bright light. So it's hard work. 180 degrees is a pain in the neck. And that's why a lot of people who are not professionals simply don't bother with the 180 degree rule. One of the mistakes I made really early on, and it took a while to work out this was a mistake, was understanding frame rates. And frame rates is everything. It's really hard to convey to someone who hasn't been doing commercial work and delivering stuff why frame rates are so important. Because frame rates set everything. You need to know your frame rate at the start of a project, not the end. And it's a way of thinking that not many photographers are used to. Here's why frame rates are really important. When we first started doing a serious amount of video work for clients, I wasn't paying enough attention to frame rate. And sometimes I would end up shooting a bunch of footage in 24 frames per second and trying to pull that into a 25 frame per second timeline. You get these weird little dropouts where suddenly the motion moves because it's missing a frame. It's lost a frame and it just has to make do. And it just has to jump from one scene to the next. If you're going to deliver something that's going to be played back at 25 frames a second, but you're capturing a whole bunch of video at 30 frames a second on one device, and on another device you're doing 24 frames a second, and maybe on your drone you've got it set to 29.87 frames per second, then this video is not going to work well. If you have a 25 frame per second timeline and you try to drop in some 30 frame per second content, you've got one or two options. You either have to play it back slowly so that now maybe everything's playing just a little bit slow motion, or you've got to drop frames. And dropping frames is bad. Dropping from 30 to 24 and just having whatever software you've got randomly cut frames so that the final frame rate works, that's a problem. If you're going to deliver your project in 25 frames per second, then you set up your cameras to shoot at 25 frames per second. Unless you're doing slow-mo, in which case you might want 50 frames a second or 100 frames per second. When you pull your footage into your timeline to do editing, if you've got a 25 frame per second timeline and you have a bunch of 25 frame per second footage, then it's just going to work really well. The short version is that frame rates matter. So So you've got some good light, you're now shooting at a frame rate that's going to match your project timeline, and we've got our shutter angle down at 180 degrees so that everything is looking smooth. So now we're going to record some stuff. And there are two main ways that your file will get recorded to camera these days. One of them is called RAW. And as we know from stills, the RAW is just a lot more data than if you're shooting JPEG. And in video terms, it gets a little bit more complicated because RAW is relatively new and RAW is a shit ton of data. I do not shoot RAW. I can't see a time soon that I would be shooting RAW. If you're working on a high-end project and you need maximum flexibility for how you're editing, sure, you might be able to justify RAW. You're going to need some very big hard drives. This is where the codecs come in, and codecs are essentially how you encode a series of still images, because video is just a series of still images. So you can think of your codecs in the same way we think of JPEG when we're shooting stills. And there are lots of different codecs to choose from, which is good and bad. As a general rule, what you're going to be doing is using a H.264 or H.265 codec. You're going to be recording in 10-bit because 8-bit is trash and you don't want to do that. You want to be in 10-bit. And now you've got 10-bit luminosity, you've got lots of good detail in there, and you just need to get your exposures right, because it's like you're shooting in JPEG in that you don't have a lot of latitude to edit later. And I am simplifying this a lot. I really, really am. My standard operating procedure is I'm using H.265 codec and I'm using 10-bit at 422 chroma. What does that mean? Because I'm not shooting RAW and I'm shooting with a codec, what's really happening is the camera is recording the luminosity as one set of data and the chroma or the color as a separate set of data. And 422 is just a very complicated way of saying it's recording about a quarter of the color data. You can think of it as overlaying some color sheets on top of a black and white image. It's just a way to use a lot less data to capture the same information. And as it turns out, the human eye can be very easily tricked when it comes to color. You don't need to know the RGB value of every single pixel to see something nice. So lots of people will be shooting at 420, which is half the data of 422. I prefer shooting at 422 because it means I've got a little bit more room for my editing. I can get a better result when I need to tweak it a bit. So for things that I'm not needing to edit or push very hard, then 420 is probably just fine. Can you see how this stuff gets complicated really quickly? You may have heard people talking about shooting in log gamma. And what does that mean? Log gamma is a way to get maximum dynamic range out of the camera, but still shooting in some of these efficient codecs. By shooting in log gamma, you are preserving a lot of the extra detail that would otherwise get lost once you compress it down to something that you're going to broadcast. When you deliver something to upload, you're probably going to be doing that in Rec. 709. That's the color space. So I shoot everything in VLOG because on the Panasonic cameras, they use the VLOG. I take that footage and I put it on my computer, and then I tell it that I'm using log gamma when I recorded it, and I convert back to a Rec. 709 color space when I deliver. Are you seeing why this stuff is really complicated now? Are you seeing why it's not a bad idea just to use your phone unless you are absolutely committed to doing the higher quality job? So shooting in log gamma is essentially a half step towards RAW quality. It gives you flexibility when you're editing the file. It lets you get the most out of the camera sensor, lets you access some of the dynamic range that it's got. It just gives you the best flexibility if you're going to push your edit in one creative direction or another. If you are thinking about making this change and coming across some stills to shooting video, you want to learn to edit, and that's going to be painful. That is going to need serious time at the desk, maybe watching a ton of YouTube videos. There are lots of great videos out there on how to do specific things once you get into the editor. My other advice is don't pay money for an editor. Start with DaVinci Resolve. This stuff is really, really good. DaVinci Resolve is made by Blackmagic. They do a whole bunch of really great gear. They make their own cameras and they make tools that you can speed up your editing with. They're a very interesting company in the video space. DaVinci Resolve is free software that you can download and it is powerful. It has a lot of features. You can pay a very small fee, a one-time fee, to upgrade to Studio, and Studio will unlock more of your processing power and will add a couple of extra features for high-end use. But most people don't need to even pay that fee to upgrade. The free version will do 99% of what you're ever going to do. The downside to DaVinci Resolve is that it is incredibly powerful and incredibly complicated. So getting your head around this software is going to be difficult. If you just want something to pull together a couple of clips really quickly, iMovie is pretty good. There's a lot of constraints on iMovie. It's not particularly advanced software, but it does what it does very well. If you're on a Mac and you don't know whether this is really the direction you want to head and you just want to pull some video into an editor and play with it, iMovie is a really good starting point. But if you know you want to do something more advanced, if you know you want to dive into the deep end, DaVinci Resolve is an excellent place to start. There is a lot to take in here, and if you're going to go down the path of video, you need to be prepared to put in some time. It really helps if you've got a project to work on, if you've got something that you actually want to film and edit and pull together, then that's a really great way to hone your skills. In our case, we were shooting travel videos and recipe videos in the kitchen. And it took months. It took months to get to a point where I felt I was delivering something of broadcast quality. The cameras themselves will record beautiful, beautiful footage. Getting control of that and having control in your hands to pull it all together is just genuine hard work. And I haven't even mentioned what's probably the hardest bit, and that's audio. It's kind of sneaky of me not to mention it until this stage of the video, but honestly, audio is the hardest part of video. You can have terrible video, and if the audio is good, the project is not lost. But if you have terrible audio and the video can be perfect and no one's going to watch it, audio is more important than the footage. What you hear matters more than what you see. When I started out doing my videos, it was mostly travel and video. And really, there's not a lot of audio that I had to worry about. All I was doing was paying for an annual subscription to Artlist. I can use all of their music tracks. I can put that down on top of the video and I'm done. That's the kind of video you're going to do. Then audio is not a big problem. But what happens when you're recording people talking, or if you're recording a conversation between two people? Audio becomes something that you really need to gain some skills in as well. If you are going to be recording people talking and conversation, you are going to have a whole other learning curve once you step into audio. Good news is, again, there's lots of people on YouTube who have excellent, excellent advice. Guys like Curtis Judd, his channel just has amazing stuff. His detail and his integrity on what works and what doesn't work and what you do need and what you don't need is just amazing. The other thing that I've learned through this process, whether it's the audio, whether it's trying to get your output right, whether it's grading the footage so that things look nice, is that it just takes practice. It takes a lot of practice to get your ear in for audio so you can hear the problems, or to get your eye in so you can see what is or isn't working with your edits. It just takes a lot of practice. I've been doing this stuff for 5 years now, and I'm still working out how to get my audio fine-tuned. That last 5% is really hard to get right. Well, that turned out to be a much longer discussion than I was expecting. Video is hard, man. Video is really, really hard. When you see professionals do it and they make it look easy, it's because they've made a lot of mistakes on the way. They have stumbled, they have screwed up, they have had dramas and issues. And they've been through a lot to get to where they are. When you see something where the light is right and the audio is fantastic and everything just works and the editing is slick, I look at that stuff and I just think, that dude's done some hard work. I'm not trying to scare people off. I'm not trying to say don't do it. What I am trying to say is invest the time. You've got to put in the time. Spend the time on YouTube. Watch a whole bunch of videos on a whole bunch of techniques and just really dig in deep. And if you do that, it can be a lot of fun. Because the thing I like about video is that I'm making something beautiful that's really different to what I can do with stills. With stills, I'm usually thinking about one frame at a time. And in video, you're thinking about the connections between how one scene moves to the next. And that's just a whole other way of thinking. It's a great creative space and it's wonderful. And you can do really beautiful things with video. And especially with the lovely cameras that we have these days. I should probably leave that there. I've gone on long enough. Thanks for joining through this one. And if you have any questions or ideas that you would like to have a conversation on, please drop a little something in the comments. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, drop me an email. It would be lovely to hear from you too. Have a great day.